Thursday, May 17th, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. So I get called a snowflake from the diehard conservatives, and I get accused of being a racist, fascist, Trump supporter by the leftists. When in actuality, I see the lunacy in both. The only way they can make sense of any viewpoint, especially an anti-establishment one such as mine, is to try and cram both into one of two wildly obtuse boxes. Think of how truly ridiculous that is, as if there are only two groups of thought on any given discussion. Yet sadly, this is how many have been conditioned to see the world, either red or blue. You must pick one. We must find a way to see past this false divide. It allows no room for debate or expression of contrasting ideas, which was at one point the very foundation of this society, or at the very least perceived to be, and is absolutely the foundation of a free society. The free expression and exchange of ideas is paramount, which is precisely why this agenda is pervasively pushed into our consciousness on a moment-by-moment basis to stop any semblance of critical thinking and rational debate, and instead create a climate of overwhelming emotional responses to any thought contrary to the intensely conditioned groupthink left-right identity politics. There was an excellent video done by the New World Next Week edition with James Corbett and James Evan Pilato, which discussed this among many other things. And as always, it did an excellent job really calling out the nonsense. And I highly recommend you check it out. Of course, I'll have that in the show notes to take a peek at. But it's interesting to see how much this just completely overwhelms the discussion today, or rather ceases to allow a real discussion. There really can be no productive debate without first leaving these false identities at the door. And that has become next to impossible for a lot of people, even those beginning to question the system, as they will fall short of any lasting progress if they fail to find their way clear of the divide and conquer maze that has been built around them. The first step is to stand back and look at the last 50 years of Republicans and Democrats and realize that there's only one party with two faces, and that party has always sought war. So the first thing I want to discuss today is something that Trump recently said, which is that if Kim Jong-un denuclearizes, then he will get protections that would be very strong. Of course, just mindlessly and unquestioningly put out by the mainstream outlets. But I find that so interesting and revealing. What a statement that is. Is the United States some kind of a organized crime outfit now? We're saying that if you do not bend to our will, that we'll take you down. But if you do what we say, then we'll put you under our protection. I mean, really think a second and take in that statement, that if he denuclearizes, he will get protections that would be very strong. I mean, I'm sure people are going to, you know, just shrug this off and say, oh, well, of course, because it's how the world works. But really take a moment and think about that. That's what's on the table right now. Either you do this, or what you'll give you sanctions and continue to basically try to overthrow your country. Or if you do what we say, we'll protect you. I mean, that's organized crime. That's what we're looking at right there. And I just found that very, very revealing. That's something I wanted to start out with, just kind of set the mood and show you how foreign policy from this country seems to have worked over the long, many, many decades we've been watching these regime change efforts and secret CIA coups, and how they pretty much just attack any country that seems to stand against them. Very, very revealing. So the first story of the day, which ties in with what we've been talking about with Israel and Hamas and Gaza and everything that's been going on, coming from theantimedia.com, Hamas, what you're not being told about Israel's arch enemy. Regardless of one's views on the hyper-polarized discussion of Palestinians and Israelis, one very important detail often goes completely unacknowledged. That is that Israel is directly responsible for the growth of Hamas. Brigadier General Yitzhak Sergeyev, if I'm saying that correctly, who served as Israeli military governor in Gaza in the early 1980s, told Pulitzer Prize winner and former New York Times journalist David Shipler that he had helped finance the Islamic movement in Palestine in an attempt to counterbalance the PLO, Palestinian Liberation Organization, and the communist movement. He said, quote, "The Israeli government gave me a budget, and the military government gives to the mosques. That early funding helped nourish the seeds of Hamas and other Muslim movements and used terrorism to undermine the Israeli-Palestinian peace process." Sergeyev is not the only Israeli official to highlight the links between Hamas's origins and Israel. Abner Cohen, who worked as a religious affairs official in Gaza for 20 years, told the Wall Street Journal in 2009 that, quote, Hamas, to my great regret, is Israel's creation. There's not really many other ways to take that. I mean, as always, people who don't want to hear this will shrug this off as misinformation or whatever, fake news, whatever they want to call it. But the very clear reality, based securely in history that we can, very easily researchable, by the way, Israel is completely 100% tied to the creation of Hamas. It just goes to show you that there's history behind this that's not being discussed in what's going on today, especially as we continue to see Hamas being the kind of always go-to excuse when discussing anything going on the Palestinian side, saying that, oh, Hamas is controlling everything and it's all terrorists, despite all the women and children and journalists and doctors being shot. Clearly, they're trying to make it seem like it's one big terrorist faction, and that's why it's all okay that they all just get shot indiscriminately. Very, very interesting. This is an article I highly recommend you read. As always, all of these you should read for yourself. But this one really goes into some history here and why there's a lot of manipulation behind this story. It's kind of very reminiscent of the idea of the U.S. and ISIS, or even Israel and ISIS, and their creation, and how it seems that these connections are, you know, slowly kind of disconnected and making it seem like they're not connected, but in reality, they're still deeply tied. Very, very interesting. Moving on to the next story coming from ZeroHedge.com, Wells Fargo employees caught improperly altering business customer docs. Just when you thought that after the last criminal offense by Wells Fargo, which as a reminder was pushing customers into higher fee retirement accounts, surely there was no way Warren Buffett's favorite criminal organization would be caught again engaging in some even more bizarre criminal activity. Alas, it was not meant to be, as Wells Fargo somehow always finds a way to break the law. Apparently, some employees have improperly altered information on documents related to corporate customers without their knowledge. The information adjusted by Wells employees varied from social security numbers to addresses to dates of birth for people associated with business banking clients, with the bulk of incidents reportedly taking place in 2017 and even early 2018, as Wells Fargo was trying to meet a deadline to comply with a regulatory consent order related to the bank's anti-money laundering controls. In other words, to comply with regulations against fabricating client data, Wells Fargo fabricated client data. The point that I always make here is that it's we have to continue to recognize that simply giving these institutions these just even billion-dollar fees means nothing to them. Clearly, time and time and time again, they break the law in just basically the same ways with zero regard to the fact that they were just caught doing that. And it seemingly has no effect on their functionality as a business, but it should. I don't know why anybody chooses to bank with Wells Fargo anymore. But the point is, we just talked about how Trump gave them one of the largest fines in history, which was a good thing. I mean, I thought it was great to see. Find them more money. But no one is ever held criminally accountable. So they just continue to do the same thing. And we also need to point out that the people behind all these criminal acts always seem to retire with their huge pensions and just move off into the sunset with all their billions of dollars while they continue on. No one gets held accountable. Like we even talked about last time, how people's cars are being repossessed, their lives being torn apart because Wells Fargo broke the law, you know, creating false accounts in their names and all the many number of things we've seen happen, and no one ever gets held accountable, even though it's very easy to trace this back to who's directly responsible, but no one ever gets held accountable. And now again, once again, we're seeing them completely break the law right in the face of the hugest fine they just received. They make so much money in such a short period of time that billions and billions of dollars in fines just means nothing to them, as we've continued to show you. But my point that I make here is that's the exact point. There's so much connection between these politicians and you know, even at the top, even Donald Trump, with these kind of huge institutions, that there's no way these people are ever going to get put in jail because they're lining the pockets of the politicians. So they'll continue to give them another fee and move them along the way, and we're going to see another Wells Fargo scandal next month. That's my prediction. But not unless you guys say something, not unless you guys stand up and freak out about this and make a big deal that Wells Fargo is one of the largest criminal organizations out there today. But it's not just Wells Fargo. It's every single bank, in my opinion, all the larger ones anyway. So what I recommend is that you immediately pull your money out of all these fraudulent criminal banks and go find some small credit union somewhere and go that route, but, or put your money under your mattress. I don't know. But the point is that these companies are stealing from you in every possible way, and they just don't even care anymore. They're willing to do it right in the face of, you know, directly following the largest fine in history. So what does that tell you? Time to move on from these criminal organizations, and really time to move on from the fiat currency, in my opinion. Go get some gold or, you know, some Bitcoin. I'm sure people are going to freak out about that. But the point is that they will rob you every way they can. So keep that in mind. Moving on to the next story coming from mintpressnews.com. Rejecting Iran sanctions, European Union bans European companies from complying. Following Europe's angry response to Trump's unilateral Iran sanctions we discussed yesterday, in which the European Union budget commissioner made it clear that Europe will not be viewed as a vassal state of the U.S. Moments ago, Reuters reported that the European Commission is set to launch tomorrow the process of activating a law that bans European companies from complying with U.S. sanctions against Iran and does not recognize any court ruling that enforce American penalties. This is a very big deal. European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker said, quote, "As the European Commission, we have the duty to protect European companies. We now need to act, and this is why we are launching the process of this to activate the blocking statute from 1996. We will do that tomorrow morning at 10:30. Juncker also recently stated, quote, "At this point, we have to replace the United States, which as an international actor has lost vigor and because of it, in the long term, influence. Europe's hardline position will infuriate Trump, no doubt, as Brussels effectively nullifying the U.S. sanctions will prompt a violent outburst from Trump, who needs Europe on his side for U.S. sanctions of Iran to have any chance of succeeding." And really, this is a very big deal and very ominous sign for the U.S. And many are even saying that this will lead to the EU dropping the petrodollar, as the next article coming from shiftplan.com, "Dollar collapse coming. EU to ditch the U.S. dollar in payment for Iran oil." According to RT, a diplomatic source with the EU has told a news outlet of the decision, saying, quote, "I'm privy to the information that the EU is going to shift from the dollar to the euro to pay for crude from Iran." So clearly this is a kind of an unnamed anonymous source, so it could ultimately mean nothing, which today it seems like there's a lot of these anonymous sources throwing around false information. But this is something we've been seeing coming for a long time. And coming off the statements from Juncker and the way that the EU is moving, this is a big deal. This is clearly leading in the direction of the kind of, you know, abandoning the US to its failed decision-making process. So very interesting to see. We should definitely keep track of where this is going, but it's becoming very clear, painfully clear, that the rest of the world is not going along with what the US is trying to accomplish with Iran. So that's a very big deal, especially when you understand how forcefully the U.S. tends to drive these things home, even with resistance. So keep that in mind. Moving on to the next story coming from mintpressnews.com. U.S. coalition killed nearly 12 times more civilians in Mosul than did ISIS. Just a few months after the U.S. declared ISIS in Iraq defeated, a new study has concluded that the U.S.-led battle to remove ISIS from Mosul, once Iraq's second largest city, ultimately killed nearly 12 times the number of civilians that were killed by the infamous terror group. The study, published in the journal PLOS Medicine, surveyed 1,200 households in Mosul for cases of civilian deaths by intentional violence since ISIS first occupied the city in 2014. The leading cases of reported deaths were found to have been direct results of the U.S.-led coalition battle to remove ISIS, with airstrikes accounting for around 40% of all reported civilian deaths, and explosions accounted for another 34%. Now, before I move forward, we have to just remember that ISIS is clearly associated with the United States and Israel and Saudi Arabia. They've all funded, armed, and created them from the get-go. So that has to play into this in your mind when you understand that maybe this means that all of them are associated with the United States, Israel, and Saudi Arabia. But in this case, they're making the clear distinction between the U.S. coalition and ISIS. But either way, this is a pretty damning study. Together, deaths attributed to the coalition accounted for 373 of the 505 total deaths reported. In contrast, the study found that only 22 civilian deaths, accounting for those killed by beheadings and gunshot wounds, were attributable to ISIS. Though the findings of this study are troubling, it is hardly the first to examine the deaths of civilians during the U.S.-led operation to liberate the city of Mosul. A previous report, published by the United Nations in November of last year, found that the coalition was responsible for the deaths of 1 in 4 civilians, with an estimated 2,521 civilians killed and 1,673 wounded during the military operation. Now, you could make any number of excuses, as I'm sure many will, to justify this, saying that they were fighting ISIS and, you know, casualties of war, or the civilians shouldn't be there, or anyone there is a combatant, or whatever, all the propaganda they put out. But imagine this broke out in your hometown and you didn't want to leave your home. Would staying there mean you were automatically a combatant? No, it does not. So in this case, there's a lot of people in this city that chose to remain. And we have to understand that that a lot, clearly 1 in 4 from the UN's own numbers, are attributable to the United States-led coalition and the United States bombings and all the people involved in that. That's a very big deal. And this understanding, the original idea of this study, 12 times the number, is a very shocking statistic. And this is an article, again, as all of these, I highly recommend you read, because it goes into a lot more statistics and showing that basically the use of just indiscriminate bombing, and they claim, which they claim is very precise, which this article goes to show is incredibly untrue. And now they're just kind of bombing areas based on the idea that they're trying to aim for a very small faction and killing, have a lot of collateral damage due to that. And that's something that I've continued to try to highlight, how this has somehow just become okay. That killing civilians, I mean, they make the point that in the Geneva Convention and many other documents, they do discuss the idea of collateral damage in war, and that it to some degree is an acceptable idea, but not at these numbers. And then we need to understand that what this does moving forward to these civilians, to the average population of Iraq, and how they view us as Americans and our government in general, and how they view America as invading, occupying state, murdering their families. I mean, it's just like Ron Paul always talks about discussing blowback and how this is why a lot of these things take place, because these people grow up hating our country due to the actions that are supposedly liberating them from something that arguably doesn't exist. That's a very alarming prospect, but these numbers you can't deny. So whatever justification many out there try to throw out, we cannot deny the fact that this supposed liberation killed far more people than the people they were supposedly being liberated from. That's got to be pretty damn revealing. And moving on to the final story of the day, and trying to end with a positive one today, coming from SeattleTimes.com, Manhattan DA says he'll stop prosecuting pot possession. Faced with fresh evidence of the racial disparity in marijuana enforcement across New York City, Manhattan's district attorney said Tuesday he will largely stop prosecuting people for possessing or smoking marijuana. Now, this is a very good step, always in the right direction, but clearly it's being framed in this racial discussion, which is a very real thing. But I want to see this as a larger idea, just in general. The idea of smoking marijuana, using marijuana, growing marijuana, it should not be something that's illegal, especially based on the general consensus of the United States. But it's important, as he did say, largely discussing possession and smoking marijuana, despite the fact that that's very clear. Many alternative outlets are trying to like disingenuously frame this, making it sound like he's refusing to prosecute marijuana arrests in general, and that's not really what he's saying there. But this is a very good thing in general, that we're taking a step in the right direction, even if it is rooted in the racial aspect, even like I said, which is a very real thing. But I would rather see this rooted in the simple idea that it's a constitutional right for us to be able to do what we want with our own bodies and to grow a plant in our backyard. But this is definitely a good step. In addition, Brooklyn's district attorney has also said he would scale back prosecutions, which seems like kind of a hollow statement. We'll see if that actually takes place. Manhattan District Attorney Vance goes on to say that his office will stop prosecuting marijuana possession and smoking cases starting August 1st, except for a few cases involving demonstrated public safety concerns, which again is kind of open-ended and ambiguous. Anything they want to deem a public safety concern, they can still prosecute. So it's not really all marijuana arrests, as some are trying to make it seem. But it's still definitely a good thing. He said the change would reduce marijuana prosecutions in the borough from roughly 5,000 per year to about 200. So I do like seeing the statistics, because it shows you that he's trying to make an effort to demonstrate how much they're going to roll this back. And really, it does show you that how predominant it is just about possession and smoking, which is absolutely ridiculous. So really, this is a very positive step. It does show you that people's minds are shifting. And this is around cannabis, but it does show you that people's minds are capable of shifting and breaking these paradigms. That's something I constantly try to point out, that it's all about our efforts. And if we can continue to bring truth to the table and wake people up to what's really going on, we can see change happen. So that is a little bit of hope, shining hope at the end of a long dark tunnel. So we need to continue our efforts. But this is a very domestic concept, the idea of marijuana legalization. And there are a lot of very important things going on at home. But I honestly continue to think that one of the largest issues and things that we should be focusing on are what is what's being carried out in our name around the world. And even as the U.S. war machine pushes forward with decade-old plans for regime change and is sabotaging peace at any cost, the writing is certainly on the wall. As the world seems to be taking a stand against the obstructionist and war-focused actions of the U.S., which the independent media has been trying to call attention to long before I came along. But now, as the U.S. geopolitical power begins to wane, it seems others are beginning to resist its efforts. But sadly, Trump seems to be doubling down and threatening those who assert their independence, even traditional allies, and for no other reason than it contradicts the U.S. decree. And more than ever, this should serve to show us that the U.S. is not the government. It's not the military. It's not the man who stands in that White House. It's you and me, us, the American people. That is who we are. And sadly, many are lost to the ever-convincing propaganda and social programming. But as the world begins to shift, I have never seen a better opportunity to shine the light on the lies and shatter that illusion. Or maybe that's just my lofty hope. But for you, for me, for us, I will never stop trying. And if you value my work and want to help it continue, please support The Last American Vagabond in any way that you can, because it is entirely 100% your financial support that allows me to continue bringing you what you will likely find nowhere else. For more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or any of the important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.